I'd like to turn today to the book of Mark, chapter 7. Book of Mark, chapter 7. We'll read verses 31 through verse 37. And again, departing from the coasts of Tyre and Sidon, he, Jesus, came unto the Sea of Galilee, through the midst of the coast of Decapolis. And they bring unto him one that was deaf, and had an impediment in his speech. And they beseech him to put his hand upon him. And he, Jesus, took him aside from the multitude, and put his fingers into his ears. And he spit and touched his tongue. And looking up to heaven, he sighed, and saith unto him, Ephphatha, that is, be opened. And straightway his ears were opened, and the string of his tongue was loosed, and he spake plain. And he charged them that they should tell no man, but the more he charged them, so much the more, a great deal, they published it, and were beyond measure astonished, saying, He hath done all things well. He maketh both the deaf to hear, and the dumb to speak. This particular miracle is only recorded by Mark, and it immediately follows the miracle that we've just looked at involving the Syrophoenician woman and her daughter. And if you remember, that miracle took place in the coasts of Tyre and Sidon, in verse 24, and from thence he arose and went into the borders of Tyre and Sidon and entered into a house, and would have no man know it, but he could not be hid. And the reason he could not be hid was because of the Syrophoenician woman. What Mark records here that we just read opens with Jesus leaving the Gentile cities of Tyre and Sidon, again, verse 31, and again departing from the coast of Tyre and Sidon. Now, Tyre and Sidon would be the northwest of the Sea of Galilee. We see that he left Tyre and Sidon and went to Decapolis, meaning a place of 10 cities. Decapolis is southeast of the Sea of Galilee, so Jesus is gone from northwest to southeast. And really, it was quite a distance. Now, we've already said Mark is the only one who records this specific miracle, but Matthew also gives record of Jesus leaving the coasts of Tyre and Sidon, and he gives us a little more detail of what happened when he did leave those coasts of Tyre and Sidon. Notice in Matthew 15 and verse 29. And Jesus departed from thence and came nigh unto the Sea of Galilee. And he went unto a mountain and he sat down there. So Matthew tells us that as Jesus left the cities of Tyre and Sidon, that he arrived and he went up into a mountain. Now, this is parallel with what Mark records, but again, Matthew does not record the particular miracle that Mark records. However, Matthew does mention something that Mark did not mention, and that is that Jesus went up into a mountain. And Matthew, if you read on there in Matthew 15, verse 29, we see Jesus sitting in this mountain. And then in verse 30, and great multitudes came unto him. I believe this is in Decapolis. Great multitudes came unto him while he was in that mountain, having with them those that were lame, blind, dumb, maimed, and many others. And what they did was they cast them down at his feet. That is, they left them there, believing that Jesus could heal them. And then Matthew records, and he healed them, insomuch that the multitudes wondered when they saw the dumb to speak, the maimed to be whole, the lame to walk, and the blind to see. And again, the maimed were made whole by the power of Christ, the lame walked by the power of Christ, the blind saw by the power of Christ, and the multitude that brought these individuals, they glorified the God of Israel, which is what we read here also in Mark chapter 7, verse 37, and they were beyond measure astonished, saying, he hath done all things well, he maketh both the dumb to hear, or the deaf to hear, and the dumb to speak. Now I believe that this man that was deaf, that we read of in Mark chapter 7, this man who was deaf and had a speech impediment that Mark tells us about, was one of those individuals who were brought to Jesus in Matthew's account, though Matthew does not dwell on any particular individual. Matthew just basically states it was a mass healing. There were the lame, the blind, the deaf. It was a mass healing. But Mark focuses on this one particular individual that was healed. So again, Mark is the only one who records this specific miracle, though Matthew does in a general way, but Mark does more specifically. So I want to look, first of all, at the details of this miracle. We'll go back to the book of Mark. We see that they brought this man, in verse 32, they bring unto him one that was deaf and had an impediment in his speech. These are the people of Decapolis, an area of 10 cities. These people were very, very much aware of the healing powers of Christ. Notice in Mark chapter 3, Mark chapter 3 and verse 8. And from Jerusalem, and Idumea, and from beyond Jordan, and they about Tyre and Sidon, a great multitude, when they had heard what great things he did, came unto him. In addition to this, we have the testimony, remember, of the demonic of Gadara. Remember that miracle, Jesus healed that demon-possessed man of Gadara. And remember that man wanted to follow Jesus, wanted to go wherever Jesus went. And Jesus said, no, you go home and you tell everybody what the Lord has done for you. Notice we have record of that in Mark chapter 5. Verse 19. In verse 18, the man who had been possessed with the devil prayed him that he might be with him. Howbeit, Jesus suffered him not. Jesus did not permit it. But saith unto him, go home to thy friends and tell them how great things the Lord hath done for thee and hath had compassion on thee. And he departed and began to publish in Decapolis, which is where Jesus is now, how great things Jesus had done for him, and all men did marvel. That is, all the people of Decapolis. They knew this man. They knew this man who had been possessed with the devil. And they have seen that this man has been changed. And this man publishes all through the cities of Decapolis how that it was Jesus who had cast the demon out of him. It was Jesus who saved his life. It was Jesus who put his life back together. And all the people in that region did marvel. So it is no wonder that when Jesus returns to, or when Jesus arrives in Decapolis, he's sitting in a mountain. The people have heard that Jesus has arrived, and they begin to bring all the lame and the maimed and the blind. They begin to bring all these people unto Christ because of what they had heard from this one man. Some time has passed since the demon-possessed man of Gadara and what we have here. But this man testified. The people listened. And they heard. And they believed, at least mentally, that this Christ has power. They could see it in the man of Gadara. They could see that his life was different. You see, the demon-possessed man of Gadara gave a twofold testimony. He testified with his lips what Jesus had done. He also testified with his life. His whole life was changed. The way he dressed was changed. The way he talked changed. Everything about him was different. And people could not help but recognize that things were different. Again, those who speak of Christ, you are better off not saying one single word if your life does not line up with what you say. We need to do both. We need to speak, and then we need to live what we say. But those who speak and do not live what they say do great harm to the cause of Christ. But this man of Gadara, he did both. And the people of Decapolis have now heard of Jesus Christ. And Mark records here in verse 32 of Mark chapter 7 that they brought unto Christ one that was deaf and had an impediment in his speech. Now I've noticed that it seems to me in the Gospels that there are two kinds of individuals that were deaf and had a speech problem. There were those who were deaf and could not speak. And it seems to me they were probably that way from birth. And then we have this individual. He was deaf, but he could still talk. It does not say that he could not speak. It says that he had an impediment in his speech. In other words, he could not speak plainly. Because in verse 35, we read, "And straightway his ears were opened, and the string of his tongue was loosed, and he spake plain." Indicating that before that, he could not speak plainly. And the reason he could not speak plainly, because he was tongue-tied. Because we see here in verse 35, the string of his tongue was loosed, and he spake plain. So we have this man, he could not hear, and it was difficult for him to speak. He had an impediment in his speech. He could not speak plainly. And again, the people of Decapolis, they have heard about Christ. They knew that this man had a need. They knew that this man had a need that they could not fix. There wasn't any one of them that could heal this man's deafness. There was not any of them who could solve the impediment of this man's speech. So having heard of Christ from the testimony, again, I believe, of the demon-possessed man of Decapolis, they bring this man to Christ. And we see here in verse 32, and they beseech him. They began to plead with Christ to put his hand upon him. They knew that all Christ had to do was to touch this individual. So at least mentally, they knew that there was power in the very touch of Christ. They may not have known that by experience, but they had heard enough about it to know in their minds that there was power in the very touch of Jesus Christ. Now, all through the Gospels, we see many different individuals that were healed. And we see some who had the same infirmities that were healed. In other words, there were several lame men healed. There were several blind people healed. There were three dead people raised to life. And you'll notice in those miracles, Jesus did not always do it the same way. He could have, but then had he done that, that would have really limited our faith, because then we would limit Christ. He healed this blind man by speaking there, and he healed this one by speaking, he healed this one by speaking, he healed this one by speaking. Therefore, we conclude that the blind are healed by Christ speaking, and we limit Christ. So Christ didn't do it that way. He healed in many different ways, because the power to heal was in the person of Christ. It didn't matter if Christ, as he did here, he spit. It didn't matter if he touched. It didn't matter if he spoke. The power is in the person of Jesus Christ. So we want to notice the manner in which Jesus worked this particular miracle. First of all, he dealt with this man in a private manner. Jesus did not always do that. But in this case, he did. We notice in verse 33, and he took him aside. And he took him aside from the multitude. So we have this multitude of people gathered around Christ. This man has been brought to Christ. And Jesus took this individual. Now again, I believe this man is part of the mass healing that we read of in Matthew 15. But Jesus took this particular individual. He took him aside. He took him away from the multitude. This is how the Lord works. The Lord can heal us spiritually or physically, but spiritually is more important. If we are in a multitude, and there are times when Jesus takes us aside from the multitude. Again, it doesn't matter. We cannot, as you look at the miracles, you cannot just pinpoint one thing and say, okay, this is the way the Lord does it every time. You can't do that. Jesus doesn't allow us to do that. And again, that's good for us. So Jesus dealt in a private manner. May I say, the Lord always deals, when he deals with us spiritually, whether we be in a group of people or we be all by ourselves, Jesus always deals with us in a private manner. That is, in a personal manner. But can you imagine this individual has Jesus Christ personally takes him aside from the multitude? What this man must have felt. Now, obviously, he didn't take him a great distance from the multitude, because Mark witnessed what happened. So we know he didn't go miles away, but just a little ways away from the multitude. And then Jesus touched this man. Remember, when they brought him to Christ, they besought him to put his hand upon him. And Jesus touched this man in a twofold way. We read there again in verse 33, he took him aside from the multitude, and he put his fingers into his ears, into his deaf ears. Now, Jesus could have just spoke, but he did more than speak. He did speak, but he did more than that. We see that he put his fingers into his deaf ears. And then we read something unusual. He spit and touched his tongue. Now I believe Christ spitting and Christ touching his tongue are connected. And this may sound gross to some, but I believe this is what happened. Jesus spit, in other words, he moistened his finger, and then he touched the man's tongue. Neither one of these, putting his finger in his ear, touching his tongue, neither one of these were the causes of the cure. The cause of the cure is Christ. And we must never, ever lose sight of that. Because the power is not in the spittle. The power is in the person of Christ. So these things were not the cause. But they were symbolic. I mean, Christ didn't do these things for no reason. They were symbolic of the power that he exerted to heal. Now we see all through the book of Mark the touch of Jesus Christ. But when Jesus spit and touched his tongue, again, this is symbolic. This isn't the cause of the cure. It was as if Jesus said to this man, only that which comes forth out of me, the spittle, entering into you, touching the tongue, can bring healing. And that's always so. That's always so. It is only that which comes forth out of Christ entering into us that can heal us. So again, the power is in Christ. Again, in the book of Mark, there are several examples of Jesus touching individuals. And these individuals were healed. And I believe every time that Jesus used his touch to heal an individual, and he did many times, but he wasn't limited to a touch as far as healing is concerned. But when Jesus touched them, it was an expression of his tenderness. It was an expression of his love. It was an expression of his compassion. And certainly it was a manifestation of his power. And it showed the ease in which he could bring healing. All he had to do was touch. Nothing difficult about touching. Nothing difficult about that. Nothing at all. And in every healing that Jesus Christ performed, there was nothing difficult to bring about the healing, which of course teaches us that Christ does everything with ease. Nothing is difficult for him. So Jesus brings this man aside from the multitude. He touches him twice. Put his finger in his ear and He touched his tongue. Then we see in verse 34, and looking up to heaven. After Jesus touched this man, he looked up to heaven. Why did he do that? Was it necessary that he do that for this man to be healed? Of course not. This wasn't the cause. Again, Christ is the cause. But everything that Jesus did is recorded, and it means something. And it means something. And that ought to interest us. He looked up to heaven. Again, the man isn't cured yet. Jesus has put his finger in his ear. Jesus has touched his tongue. But the man is still deaf. The man still has an impediment in his speech. But when Jesus looked up to heaven, it was as if he said, what is about to happen to you comes from above. And that is a lesson that we need to always remember. Whatever comes to us comes from above. All the blessings of God come from above. I believe another reason that Jesus perhaps looked up to heaven was to give the Father the praise and the glory for what was about to happen. There are other occasions when Jesus looked up to heaven, and that is something that we ought to be constantly doing, is looking up to heaven, because that's where the blessings come from. And we'll continue next week. But these people had heard of Christ from an individual who had experienced Jesus Christ. And in time, they remembered what they heard. They may not have appreciated the man of Gadara, but they could not get away from what he told them, and they could not get away from the change that was manifested in his life. And we need to remember that every day. We need to tell folks about Christ. You say, well, there was no response at all. You leave that with the Lord. Or they got angry. You leave that with the Lord. You never know. It may be 20 years down the road, and they remember the day that you told them about Christ. The day they need it the most, they remember. So we must always tell. Always be talking. Always be telling folks about the Lord. And then, of course, manifesting it. Manifesting it in our lives. Because you can undo everything you say by how you live. I can remember working for a man, and there was this girl, young woman, who witnessed to all the employees, and one day she was caught stealing out of the cash register, and I'll never forget what the boss said. I can't say everything he said, but you take your religion and you get out of here. There was a connection between what she spoke and what she had done, and it didn't line up. It was a terrible, terrible testimony. And people remember those things the rest of their lives, and they will use that as an excuse. And then they begin to label, yeah, I knew a Christian one time. I knew someone just like you, and they stole. And they put everybody in the same box. So when a person talks and then they live contrary to what they say, they do much damage. The best thing to do, of course, is live what you say. But if you can't live what you say, keep your mouth shut. You don't need to be telling other people, because you do more harm than good. Let's look to the Lord.